Okay, looking at the canals again, we have great history, we have recorded maps, we know what the features have been like as they've evolved over the last roughly 300 plus years. And we've already looked at the 17th Street Canal. You can see here the embankment that slid sideways. It opened a bit like a door hinge, and most of the water went rushing through this area here. We're not going to do that one again. This is London Avenue North. There was a big breach on the west side. The east side is a distress section where the levee wall moved and tilted, but didn't quite fail. It was not an incipient failure getting ready to fail. It was a failure in progress. It was already moving when this side failed and drew down the water and saved it. So on this side over here, we have it frozen in time like a photograph of a failure developing. And therefore, we have a wonderful analysis pairing. This one obviously failed. This one's in the process of failing. You can see the wall tilting right along here. You can also see the second main problem in the canal area. Look at all the houses and how close they are to these levees. And then look at all the trees in the backyards, which are at and on the levee toes. This is unacceptable. This creates a major hazard for both inspection and maintenance. It also creates a hazard with regard to actual triggering of levee failures. And as you'll see in about 3 minutes at London South, that may in fact have been part of the mechanism of failure. What should have happened here was somebody should have acquired enough property to make these levees wider and to clean the toes off and keep them inspected and maintained properly. That would have cost more. This is the west side failure. You can see the embankment was cut in half and the wall pushed away. Here's the remaining piece of the embankment on the toe side, still in place with the wall peeled back from it. On the other side, you can see the wall leaning. You can see the gap is now open. Water is in it, and it was pushing, but it was saved because the other side failed and drew the water down. This is an analysis of that. This is the west side, so the canal's over here. The water's running under. The little arrows are the seepage running through a very thick deposit of sand. The sheet piles would have had to come from here all the way down into the clay to cut it off. So significantly longer sheet piles would have been necessary to render this section stable. That would have cost a lot more money. The result on the east side is the underseepage flow raised the pore pressures, weakened the soils, and failure occurred at the interface between the sands and the overlying clays. I'm showing the east side here because it raises one more issue. A lot of the original analyses were done assuming horizontal sections because borings were done along the levee crests. These layers are not horizontal. There are things like this, which are stratigraphy. And on the east side, it was this little bit of a dip here, which saved it. The same section exists on the west side, where it is pretty much horizontal. It actually dips down a bit towards the land side, and it failed. But over here, you have to push it up a hill. The water has to push the soil here up a hill. And that little bit of up a hill gave it just enough extra resistance to barely save this section during the event. These are factors of safety calculated on both sides. Again, storm surge elevation versus factor of safety. When you cross the line at one, you fail. This one failed just before the storm surge peaked. It almost made it. This one over here didn't quite fail. It was just trying to, and the water got drawn down, and it was saved. This is London South. London South is a very short failure feature. It's only about 65 feet across. You can see the walls have fallen down. What happened here was a big blowout underseepage failure, and everything fell into the hole. This is analysis of the underseepage. You can see the vectors coming through for the water. These are contours of what we call gradient. That's the erosion potential. And the erosion potential is unacceptably high right here, and a hole began to evolve. As the hole evolves, the water turns from here and starts to go into the hole because the water seeks the easiest path. You may give it a shorter path that follows the short path, and so the gradients increase. And as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it eats its way back, kind of like this. This is a cartoon of that. You can see the levee section when the water comes up and goes under. A hole begins to erode, the water converges on the hole, it eats it faster, and it starts to dig itself back under, creating essentially a tunnel or a pipe. And so this is called piping erosion. It's also a blowout. What happens then is the embankment begins to slough in from the top and the sides, and eventually the hole. My mic go off? Eventually the whole section goes away on you. Now the second way this can happen involves the trees. If you have a tree at this location, as the water comes up, the pore pressures reduce the soil strength, so the tree roots are not very well held. What you don't want now is a wind. And of course, during hurricane, you also had wind, and so a lot of these trees blew over. When the trees blow over, it leaves a hole where the root ball was, and that is now the preferential path for seepage, and so you can initiate the piping failure at a location where a tree went down. Here's that section. You can see trees all along the toe over here. There were trees all along over here, but in here they've been cleaned up for the repairs. But there was a major tree right here, and here was your breach, and everybody wants to hang somebody. Here is the tree that was at that location. If you want to hang somebody, this is probably your tree. This may well have been the tree that accelerated or initiated the beginnings of piping erosion there. But if the tree hadn't been there, this section would have failed anyway. So the tree, again, is not really the culprit here. It's just part of a more complicated mechanism. Okay, I want to finish on a positive note. This is the Mr. Go section again. In fact, here you have the lock structure at Bayou Bienvenue. You can see a large barge parked on the crest of the levee. And you can also see large scour holes through here. The red line, is the levee crest elevation prior to Katrina, and the blue line is the crest elevation after Katrina. What you can see is massive scour and erosion over here. And in the photograph, you can see all that material laid out behind the levees. A lot of light-colored material, a lot of sands and shells and similar. You can also see a major scour hole just up against the lock structure right up in here. That's the hole down through this way and a big feature right down through there on the other side. This is a very difficult reconstruction project. I want to point out that there have been some very strong positives in this work also. The Corps of Engineers has done a magnificent logistical job of massive reconstruction under tough circumstances and nowhere tougher than the Mr. Go frontage. There is no locally available good fill material, so they have to process local marsh clays and make them into a good clay fill, and that's a very uphill task. In our view, it wasn't working very well in January and February, and there was a lot of reported jousting back and forth between our team and the Corps at that stage. In March, there was a come-to-Jesus session held. As far as we can tell, Colonel Lewis Setliff got these people together, closed the door. Not all of them walked out of the room alive, perhaps, but this project was turned around dramatically over the next 2 weeks. The amount of contractors, equipment, and personnel available probably quintupled, as did the number and the motivation of the Corps inspectors, who became very, very good at what they were doing. We went back out in early April, and the inspectors were able to pick up a handful of soil, play with it, manipulate it with us. We could discuss the water content, the compactability, whether it was suitable for fill, whether it had to be discarded, and we saw nothing but good work. We went back and drilled in late April the southern section and the northern section of the three. We haven't yet accessed the middle because it has no land access, and they're working hard, but in the next few weeks, we'll go back and drill the middle piece. And what we found in these sections was what we expected. You can see well-dressed slopes of what looked like good clay material, and when we took samples, what we found was good clay material. As one of our field inspectors said, they've built a clay brick at the north end and the south end. And what you want is a clay brick. If you have a brick of clay and you run water on it, not much happens. If you have a handful of sand and you run water on it, you don't have a handful of anything. It's gone now. And this is how it wants to be. So we've seen some very, very good work in addition to the problems, and we have, again, a very complex and mixed situation on many fronts. Where does it go next? Where it goes next is a lot of people are wondering, can they move back in safely? They're wondering what has to be done to make it safe to move back in. And they're wondering what needs to be done over the long run to make sure something like this never happens again. And so we've done a lot of other studies. Professor B will be speaking in a minute, but this is the punchline from the technical side. The level of safety built into the New Orleans levee system was not adequate, and it was not suitable for a major urban population. This is a risk plot showing risk levels for various kinds of structures and systems, including people and buildings, dams, offshore mobile oil rigs, which are sort of up here in the gamble range. What you have here is the number of lives lost in a catastrophe, the number of dollars lost in a catastrophe, and that puts New Orleans in this area for those two columns. Over here you have the annual likelihood of doing that. As best we can tell, the New Orleans levee system was going to fail like this in a hurricane about every 50 to 100 years, the way it was constructed at the time of Katrina's arrival. And that put New Orleans up in this neighborhood. In the United States, when we do dam engineering, because dams are major structures that can threaten large populations, we work in this neighborhood down here. This is U.S. dam practice. The distance from here down to here is 3 tick marks on what is a logarithmic scale. Each of these is times 10, times 10, times 10. So U.S. dams are roughly 1,000 times safer than the New Orleans levee system. And that's considered a prudent level of risk because they threaten large populations. It is the position of our team that urban areas which are protected by a levee system are, for all practical purposes, a dam. And they need to be engineered to similar levels of safety. That costs a bit more. And so we need to move from here to here. How do you get there? Professor B will explain that, but basically we spent our time going down this side over here. This is the technical side of construction of levees. Underlying the technical side is the political, the social, the organizational, the institutional side, and human factors. And to address all those things, one of the world's leading experts on technical forensics with human factors and organizational issues is Professor Bob B. from the University of California, Berkeley. Bob?